This is CIOY 101.5 FM. The Hawk is on the air. Hey, everybody. Thanks so much for tuning in again tonight. It's lovely to see all of you virtually. I'm Sarah Jessica, and this is Hot Shots on Air. And tonight I'm hanging out with Aisha Barrow. She's a Hamilton-based singer-songwriter and lead vocalist of pop/R&B group Life in the Tribe. You can find Aisha on Twitter as AishaB93 or Life in the Tribe, and all streaming services, Bandcamp, website, and other socials as Life in the Tribe. So, hey, Aisha, thanks so much for jumping on here and talking to me.
No worries. Thank you for having me, and thanks for such a great intro.
Yeah, you're welcome. Of course. I guess, like, just to kind of start everything off, how would you describe your sound and style?
Sound and style, it's ever-evolving. However, I think I found, like, a really good base of R&B and pop. It's an amalgamation of all the things I loved as a kid, so it's like 90s R&B and 90s pop music, but with sort of like a modern twist and flair, so it gives you that hit of nostalgia, but like also very, very aware of the time that it's in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Who would you say are your biggest musical influences?
Janet Jackson.
Mm-hmm.
Is my biggest musical influence, hands down. Just because of the way that she took control of her narrative and her career, and she didn't allow herself to be placed in a box. So a lot of the time, as artists of color or singers or any of that sort of stuff, we get told that we can either do jazz or R&B, and Janet Jackson really said, I'm a pop girl. I'm going to do pop music. It doesn't mean that I'm not, you know, close to my R&B roots or my Motown roots, but I have a multitude of sounds that I can do, and that's where I really draw inspiration from. Beyond that, there's artists like Sade and Nina Simone and Anita Baker. Those guys are my real big inspiration.
Yeah, for sure. Do you remember what you listened to as a kid or what was played around your home? And do you think that has an impact on your current style? And do you still listen to those artists today?
Yeah, I mean, I grew up in a Gambian household. So Gambia's just a tiny country in West Africa. I like to say it's on the nose of Africa. So we listen to a lot of I guess traditional music, but also the popular music from Gambia at that time. So lots of artists like Youssou N'Dour or Pop Juice, but I'm aware that most of your listeners probably have no idea what I'm talking about when I say those names. But beyond that as well, I grew up around all of that. So that was high energy, very percussive music. And then my biggest inspiration to what I would listen to musically are my older sisters. So they listen to a lot of R&B and a lot of pop music, and I got my taste from them. So they were listening to a lot of Jodeci and 112 and Mary J. Blige and just real great early 90s R&B artists. So I just took that on with me. We listened to a lot of that, a lot of neo soul as well. And it's sort of exclusively what I still listen to this day. on the up and up with the new stuff and, like, the new pop music, and I do an all right job, but there's nothing quite like an old 90s R&B track for me.
Oh, for sure. Do you remember when you first, like, kind of discovered music? Like, when did it first make a big impact and you were like, oh, I want to do that?
This question's always tough because I can't say that I do, but what that means for me is that I was always singing as a kid all the time. Like, everywhere I went, I was always singing. It also didn't help that, like, when I was younger, I did not have a very good voice either. Mm-hmm. So, like, my speaking voice was this at the age of 8. So you can imagine how jarring that was.
I bet your parents loved it.
Sorry?
I bet your parents loved it.
Oh, yeah, they loved every minute of it. No, they were over it. But no, I was just always singing around the house and performing, and I was also the middle child, so I always wanted to entertain and be the center of attention because there were two older and two younger, so I was like, how do I stand out? So it was from then. It's just kind of a natural evolution. It wasn't something like where I was like, oh, this is what I have to do. It was always like, oh, well, what else would I do? You know, like, I didn't really think about anything else. Singing is kind of just like breathing to me. It's just something I do. So it wasn't a moment of this is my career path. It was a moment of like, well, I genuinely don't know what else I would do. Like, this is the only thing I can ever think of myself doing.
Yeah. Do you remember when you first started creating music? And by any chance, do you remember the first song that you wrote?
I do remember the first song that I wrote.
Yeah.
And I have to laugh about it. Because I was going through an emo phase.
Oh, beauty.
But I was like super young and I didn't even understand what an emo phase was.
Mm-hmm.
So, but I just knew that my favorite artists were like, pop punk was, I was really into pop punk at that time. My favorite artists were all talking about how angry and upset they were. So I was like eight or nine, and I wrote a song called Hatred Consumes Me. Didn't know what that meant at that time. And I still remember that song to that day. But then immediately after that, I realized, oh, maybe this isn't the song that you want to be singing. So then I wrote a Christmas song. Called Raise Your Hands Up in the Sky. Believe that you can do anything that you can try because it's Christmas time.
Aww.
Yeah, it's Christmas time. Yeah.
That's so sweet. Do you remember when you started looking at music as something more than a hobby?
Yeah, I would say it was really while I was in university.
Mm-hmm.
I was just in a program that I didn't care too much for. And music was escapism. So I had just gotten a MacBook and I was learning how to use GarageBand and really like dipping my toes into production. And eventually the school thing just really, or that particular school thing just really got to me too much. So I would spend more time producing and making music than I would on my schoolwork. And I just thought to myself, if you're expending all this energy over in this direction, why don't you pursue it in a serious way? And that was when I really thought to go for it as sort of as a job, as a career.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So I know that you studied music at Mohawk. How was your time there?
Mohawk was great. I loved it. It was really, really great. It gave me the opportunity to sort of, because it was a generalized program, it was an applied music program, so it gave me the opportunity to try a little bit of everything and to sort of decide what I wanted to do. And the community that I built there is still the community that I perform with to this day. These are the guys that are in my band, that I do shows with. I really, really enjoyed Mohawk. I would always say to people, there is no better community of people and community of friends to make than at Mohawk.
Mm-hmm.
They really do come through for you as fellow musicians and just as friends.
Mm-hmm. What do you think was the most important lesson that you took away from that program?
I think because the program was broken up into two streams, so it was broken up into a jazz or contemporary program, I should say, and a classical one. So despite it being great, I did feel like I was sort of kind of boxed in to those two things. If I didn't want to do contemporary, which is essentially just jazz, then I would have had to do classical. So one of the biggest lessons that I learned there, and what I realized during my time there, was that the more I stayed true to sort of the sound and the music that I wanted to do, the more it was well received by my peers, and it was great for me. So what I learned over there was that the foundations that they teach you are important, and you are to use those to sort of expound and build upon the sounds that you want to create for yourself. So what it really taught me was how to be an individual despite of being told what I should be and what I shouldn't be.
Mm-hmm. Do you remember when you joined your first band or performed under your first like solo act?
Yeah, so before I came to Hamilton and I came to Mohawk, there was that period where I had decided that I wanted to do music, but I just didn't know how to go about it. So mm-hmm. what I did was I trolled through Kijiji to see if people were looking for lead singers for their band, and or like backing vocalists or stuff like that. And I joined a rock band at that time, or I think they called it Psychedelic Soul Funk. It was a lot. Band that was called Other Moons. And we were together for about 2 or 3 years. And that was the first sort of solo band-ish original music act that I was a part of. And it was really fun. It was really, really fun. I really enjoyed it.
Cool. How did your family and friends initially react to you pursuing music? I know there's a bit of a stigma against the industry and certain stereotypes about, you know, available jobs and money making, but how was your experience?
I mean, obviously it's a tough one. I was in university and then I decided to drop out and pursue music at another program. So I would say that, like, my parents weren't necessarily too happy about it. But I think they came to an understanding that, like, it's my life, and I'm going to pursue it with or without their blessing. So they sort of have given me the, like, we don't get it, but go right ahead. And my sisters have always been extremely supportive. They would always be like, well, yeah, Aisha, what else would you have done? We all knew that you were going to do music. So they've been supportive. For the most part, though, I think people, it's like with any sort of artistic career or any sort of liberal arts sort of career, people, I find, think of it as cool, but they don't quite understand it. So it's more of like, oh, that's great. And they kind of just leave it alone. It's never a hostility. I've gotten some people here and there being like, well, what do you exactly think you're going to do with this, you know? But for the most part, people have been supportive, I would say.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's good to hear. What are the major ways your music has changed since you first started writing?
I think getting to know myself more and going through some hardships as well have changed my sound. I think delving into the world of production has changed my sound, and working with other musicians has changed my sound. So I think what it is, it's evolved. I'm able to implement and execute my ideas more effectively because I have more knowledge on how to do so. So what that means is that I'm able to be more honest with myself musically and not just sort of do what I'm told or given. And I'm able to write the songs that I want to write and explain them to a musician and be like, this is how I want you to do it. And they're able to execute it. So I think I've just grown more into myself, and so has my music.
Mm-hmm. So you didn't grow up in Hamilton, did you?
No, I grew up in Guelph.
Mm-hmm. So why stick around in Hamilton?
Hamilton is just, you know, it's sort of the place that I landed, and it's the place that makes the most sense. There's tons of opportunities here for musicians. all of my music friends are here. We built quite a strong community, even despite the pandemic. So it just makes sense to be here. My friends are here. My life is here. My work is here. The goal is always, obviously, to expand. However, this is just where networking happens for me. So it makes sense to be in this city.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What do you think makes Hamilton's music community so special?
I think it's the way that we all rally around each other to help one another. There is, I find that like competitiveness that can happen in other music communities doesn't happen to the same degree here. There's obviously competitiveness, it's the nature of our business. However, I do think that when you build relationships here in whatever artistic community you're in, people are really, really willing to help you in whatever way they can. And I really enjoy that here. I don't feel pressured to only interact with people based on career perspectives. I get to work with my friends, and it does feel like that. It feels like everyone in the music community here is your friend.
Who are some talented Hamilton-based artists that you think deserve more spotlight?
Well, I would say Juliana Jones. She's an R&B pop artist here. She's great. I think she deserves more spotlight. Angela Nethersole, who's another R&B artist here as well. I would love to hear more of her stuff. Shanika Maria, she also has another outfit called Shan Shan. She's a producer of ambient music, and it's like folksy. I think that they deserve to be heard as well. There's so many musicians here. Garrett LaJoie. I always call him LaJoie. Garrett LaJoie, a great producer, has been an immense help to both me and Juliana Jones. So I would love to see him work with other artists and hear more of his other stuff be put on a platform. English as well. I mean, I could keep going. Do you want me to keep going?
However long you want, honestly.
Yes. Yeah, okay. English, producer based out of Hamilton, he's great. He does electronic music, but it's sort of a bit of everything. It's amazing. There's so many artists in this city that I think deserve spotlight, and I can't wait to hear more from them.
Yeah. Oh, my God. There's so many. Who's a dream collaborator of yours? So think big on this one. Literally anyone.
Okay. I'll go down my list.
Yeah. Do it.
Dream collaborator. I would love to work with Bruno Mars. I would love to work with Bruno Mars, and people always look at me weirdly when I say that, but I think if we're talking about nostalgia and referential music, I think that man knows how to do it extremely well, and he's at the top of his game in that sense. I would love to work with... Who would I love to work with? I would love to work with Kate Renata, producer Kate Renata. I would love to work with him. I would love to work with Nao. I would just like for her to let me be like her assistant. We don't even have to do music together. I just want to like, just let me like carry your bags or something. I just want to learn from her. I mean, like the ultimate, obviously, would be Beyonce. She's everyone's dream collaborator. Mm-hmm. But yeah, no. Those are some people that I'd love to work with. And obviously, like, my influence is, like, I'd love to work with a Janet Jackson, and I'd love to work with Anita Baker and Sade and Lauryn Hill. Yeah, I'd love to work with them.
Mm-hmm. Who's a local artist that you'd love to collab with on something?
I'd love to work with so many local artists. Are you kidding me?
Mm-hmm.
Well, Shanika Maria, for one, I'd love to collaborate with her. I'd love to collaborate with Angela Nethersole. I'd love to collaborate with Juliana Jones. And actually, I think we are going to collaborate. So you can hold me to that. There's so many people that I'm also already in the works of collaborating with that I don't necessarily want to say right now. But yeah, there are more collaborations coming. I mostly just want to collaborate with as many artists in this city, because I do think that that we've got something to say, and the best way we can say it is if we come together.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Your most recent single, Type, was released earlier this year. I know the single holds personal meaning for you. Do you want to talk a little bit about what that's about?
Yeah, of course. Type is sort of a self-affirming single. I grew up in a predominantly white neighborhood, and most of the schools that I attend are predominantly white. And well, growing up in that type of environment can sort of mess with you mentally in your self-worth, in that, like, nobody really sees you. Or they don't understand you, or they don't understand what you're going through. And even in just a little way too, that occurs, like going to a dance with a guy or going to a prom with a guy and being told that, like, you're too intimidating when, in my opinion, I couldn't intimidate a fly, or you know, just being overlooked. And the song was sort of an ode to Black women, specifically dark-skinned Black women everywhere. I know that we are oftentimes overlooked as the trendsetters that we are, as the beauties that we are, as the visionaries that we are. So Type was sort of me saying, I see me and I see you, and I know exactly what your worth is. And I know so much so that I'm going to write a song and make a video about it, because I want to fill us all up with love. And that's sort of what that song was about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Was Type co-written, or was it written entirely by you?
Type was written by me. It was produced by, by Garrett LaJoy. I sent him the arrangement of the song, the lyrics of the song, and I asked him to sort of work his magic on it. And he did the production aspect of it, and he's amazing. He got it to sound exactly the way that I heard it in my head.
Mm-hmm. So did you record that at home then?
Yes, that one I did record at home. Mm-hmm. I recorded it at home. Yeah.
What do you hope your listeners take away from Type?
Well, just that I know that, like, the song has the braggadocio of hip-hop involved in it, but it really is a song of love. It's me saying to all of my listeners that, like, I see you and I appreciate you, and I understand how hard it is to navigate this world when you feel like you're not seen, but, like, I see you. I get it, and you know, the cream rises to the top. I don't know if that's a saying. I might have just made that up right now.
I believe it.
But yeah, eventually, like, you'll be seen as well.
Mm-hmm. So you also have a music video for the song. Who did you work with to create that?
So I work with a group called Ultimatum Group, and they're my friends, Victoria and Drew. And they were so amazing. In that we scouted locations, we filmed in Hamilton, because Hamilton has so many great natural resources, so we went to some of the waterfalls here, we went to some of our great parks here, and we really wanted to just sort of create this, like, ethereal forest witch vibe, which I think is what you commented on the video.
Mm-hmm.
And that's exactly what we're going for, and they were really great. They're amazing because they're musicians as well, so they were super receptive to what I wanted and what my vision was. They were able to execute it in the way, again, that I wanted it to be executed.
Mm-hmm. So we're going to hit pause on this conversation for a minute and play everyone a Life in the Tribe single. Capital was released in 2020, and it's about falling behind your partner when it comes to financial and professional successes.
get overwhelmed. My heart, it feels heavy. I don't want to lose myself. You're running in miles, I'm seconds behind. I can't give up, not giving up, still pushing to try. You figured it out, I'm still in doubt. Not giving in, just breathing in, don't want to lose. For it, but part of me is falling deep, don't want to manifest all these things I don't want to believe. I want you to be a part of me, just as much as I'm a part of it. Baby, can we profit from this love? I want you to be a part of it, just as much.
For anyone just joining us, this is Hot Shots on Air, and tonight I'm speaking with Aisha Barrow. She's a Hamilton-based singer-songwriter and the frontwoman of pop/R&B group Life in the Tribe. So we just got back from playing your 2020 single, Capital. Can you give me a little insight into the writing process and what the track means to you?
Yeah, I mean, Capital was written during a time where I was really, really grinding in the music scene, really, really working hard, and I just felt like it was, nothing was really coming into fruition, and I think I have the disease of self-comparison, as do a lot of us, so just comparing myself to a lot of other people and feeling as though I wasn't seeing the results of the hard work that I was putting in, and I just wanted sort of to be a part of that circle, a part of the select few who were doing well for themselves. As we know, this career can be hard, so I took that sort of frustration and I put it into a song, and I'm really, really proud of how it came out. It's got this, like, bossa nova vibe to it, heavily influenced by Sade for me. And yeah, I'm very, very proud of it.
Yeah. Who did you work with to record and produce the single?
This one, the guitarist on it is Jason Azario. So he's my guitarist in Life of the Tribe. However, I wrote it and essentially produced it as well, and mixed and mastered it. So it was a labor of love.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. What do you hope your audience takes away from that song?
Well, I hope, as with all of my songs, I hope that the audience sees themselves in it. That despite what anyone's sort of social media persona is or musical persona is, this work is, you know, hard and can feel real tough at times, and that they're not alone in that. If they feel like they're working hard in whatever industry they're in and they're not seeing the results that they want to be seeing, but that is a very, like, common experience amongst all of us, amongst women in particular. We tend to work really, really, really hard and waiting for sort of our flowers to come in, and I want them to feel like that they're not alone in that feeling, and that there is another side to that feeling as well, that eventually you do come out of that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Back in November of 2020, you shared a video project that you were a part of with Jillian Nicola.
Yeah.
Yeah, you guys, anyone listening can find the song and video called She Stays Silent on Jillian's YouTube channel. But I wanted you, Aisha, to describe the project a bit and tell us how you became involved in that.
Well, yeah, that was a really fun one to do. Well, fun is a strong word here, in that, like, the subject matter was quite tough, but it was cathartic, I think I should say, one to do, in that Jillian contacted me through Facebook and was telling me about her song, and she wanted me to be a part of the video, and it was my honor, to be totally honest. I think as a woman, we've all had experiences, uncomfortable experiences, and we can relate to the lyrics in that song quite well. So to be there and to be surrounded by all those women sort of expressing themselves and expressing about the trauma that we've all collectively faced was quite cathartic. And I'm eternally grateful to Jillian for asking me to be part of that project. It was really, really amazing to share that space with all of them.
Mm-hmm. What do you hope that viewers, you know, both like men and women alike, can take away from that song and video?
Well, in that, what I really hope that they take away is an understanding of sort of the mentality of us women, and why we won't sometimes speak up when we are faced with trauma. It's because we don't necessarily know who we believe, and that's why we face silence sometimes in the face of that. So I hope it opens up a conversation and it sort of gives people an understanding that there are lots of people who are facing trauma and don't have sort of the don't have it in them to speak out and to deal with the ramifications of that, and for us to give people more grace in the face of their trauma.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I noticed that you were also a speaker in 2020 on the Diverse and Converse panel for Rogers TV for Black Heritage Month. How did you get involved with that, and what did you share?
Yeah, I mean, I got involved with it through a friend of mine named Kayla Gerber. She goes by Queen. And she invited me to speak on that panel, and essentially they were just talking about our experiences sort of as artists of color in this industry, and what that looks like for us, and moving forward, what can be done, sort of make it a more favorable space for us as artists of color in the industry, and it was a really informative conversation. It's always nice to get into a room full of your peers and to have these discussions with them, and to sort of bounce ideas off of one another. So essentially it's just us recounting our experiences and sort of creating a space of validation for one another.
Mm-hmm. What do you hope to see in the aftermath of conversations like this?
Well, I hope to see the onus of the conversation not only being on artists of color. Mm-hmm. What I hope to see is more non-Black people, specifically white people, to be a part of these conversations as well, to not just put that conversation on Black people, Black women in particular.
Mm-hmm.
I think that we have experienced this. We've done the work. We've created the framework. So it's a time for them to now be a part of the conversation and to bring their friends to be a part of the conversation so that, you know, the accountability on their end can be taken and they can implement it in their circles as well.
Mm-hmm. So I know that you're somebody who likes to get involved in different events and projects and things like that. Can you tell me about a favorite of yours from the last, like, maybe 3 years or so?
Well, a favorite of mine has been quite recent, actually.
Mm-hmm.
It was a couple of weeks ago, and it was the BIPOC Hamilton Arts series in which they take a bunch of BIPOC Hamilton artists and they sort of give them a 20-minute concert series, and it's run by the Hamilton Arts Council with the help of Deshaun of like Band Push Media, and that was really, really fun in that, you know, we are still in this pandemic, and we don't get to perform quite a bit as much as we'd like to. So this gave us a space to have a full-on concert series, a video series, which is far and few between for up-and-coming artists, and to just sort of let loose. And for this one, I told myself before, I would really show up as myself. I would really, really show up as who I see myself to be, the kind of artist that I saw myself to be. So what that meant for me was dressing however I wanted to dress and singing my original music and performing in the way that I wanted to do. And that was really, really fun. And that should be coming out soon. So keep an eye out for that.
Awesome. I know that you're also going to perform pretty soon at the Gasworks because they're starting their porch series. How did you get involved with that, and how were you invited?
I was contacted by Michael from the Gasworks to do that show. And the Gasworks is a special place. I've performed there quite a bit before their renovation process began with Darcy Hebner's R&B All-Stars. I was singing backing vocals for him. So when they contacted me, it was a no-brainer. I like the Gasworks. I love the work that they do, the venue that they have, and I'm excited to add that performance to the roster.
Mm-hmm. What day is that?
It's on August 25th, so I believe it's a Wednesday. I'll have to double-check that, but I believe it's a Wednesday.
Okay, awesome. I noticed you like to cover songs across your YouTube channel and Instagram both, including artists like Janet Jackson, Solange, Tevin Campbell. Why create covers, and do you feel as though performing other artists' songs improve your own songwriting?
Yeah, I love to do covers, and I do believe that it does improve my own songwriting, but more than that, it improves my vocal agility. I tend to cover songs sort of as a result of trying to get my voice to go into different places, maybe in places that I'm not necessarily comfortable with. So I'll take an artist who sings maybe mainly in head voice or in chest voice, because perhaps I'm not as strong in one space or the other. So it's sort of a way of practice, and it's sort of a way of like saying homage to my favorite vocalists and my favorite singers. I always try to sort of embody some of them in what I do, and that's really what the covers are about, more so than like building or expounding on my songwriting. And it's about building my vocal agility and also just having lots of fun singing songs that I enjoy.
Yeah, totally. Is there a song or an artist that you've always wanted to cover but have been too hesitant or like intimidated to?
Anything by Whitney Houston. Mm-hmm. I try not to touch her songs because I'm like, no one can sing them like her. And B, it takes a lot of work. She was and sort of still is a vocal anomaly in that her voice can pretty much do anything. So I would love to cover her songs, but I don't know if I'm quite there yet in vocal ability to touch them. But I guess it's what practice is for, and, you know, how will I know if I don't try?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So we all know the ways in which COVID has hurt the entertainment industry. But I'm curious as to what you feel you learned from this pandemic. So what would you say are your biggest takeaways about both the community around you and maybe like the world as a whole, but also from within yourself?
I think in a personal sense, the COVID taught us all how to, well, for those of us who had the privilege of being healthy and being housed, it taught us the importance of rest. I think coming back out of COVID, my discipline is stronger because I've been able to rest and focus on it. My practicing is stronger as well as a musician. And, you know, it gave me time to sort of discern what I really wanted out of this career that I've chosen. So that's what it taught me and given me. About the music community, it's really taught us that we really do rely on one another, and we really do need each other's help as far as moving forward is concerned. Because this pandemic has allowed me to reach out to people that perhaps I wanted to collaborate with that I haven't, and set up something after, you know, restrictions were lifted so that we could collaborate together. It really taught me the power of performing together and how music is a shared experience.
Mm-hmm. What do you feel that you've gained from all this introspective time that's kind of been forced on us in the last couple of years?
Yeah, I think a greater sense of self and a greater understanding again of what I want to do or who I want to be in this industry. All this time, when you're in the go of it all, you're just sort of from one gig to the next, or from one photo shoot to the next, or whatever it may be. And taking the time to rest really allowed me to discern what I wanted for myself, for my career, and to be more intentional with what I put out. And not just putting out music like for the sake of it, putting out stuff that I really enjoy and creating a plan for it and creating visuals for it. That's been really interesting and effective.
Mm-hmm. Do you think that there's been any good in terms of a COVID-19, the pandemic and restrictions, and in regards to the music industry? Do you think that's changed or maybe brought light to certain problems within the industry?
Yeah, I mean, I would say, has it been any good? I think it's forced artists to be self-sufficient, for sure. Like, we've had to really, really make use of the space that we have, whatever it may be. You know, if you have a closet to record in, that's what you're going to record in, you know? And I don't think that's just musicians. I think that's all of us, podcasters, radio personalities, whatever you may be. You really had to become malleable and adaptable to your surroundings and to your time. I think that's been really great, a great result of it. I think what it's also shown us is how volatile this industry really is, that we aren't as in control as we thought that we were, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Whole hosts of people have lost their income through not being able to, you know, perform or not being able to open their bars or any of that sort, or not being able to tour. So there's, I guess, got to be a system in place for us to be able to continue to survive, even when there are interruptions in our in our income generating section.
Mm-hmm. What do you think, in your opinion, has been the best opportunity or event that you've got to be a part of during the pandemic?
During the pandemic?
Yeah.
Oddly enough, I was allowed to like be in a bunch of festivals. I mean, they were isolated, obviously, and they weren't sort of in the same vein as a typical festival would mm-hmm. be, but I was able to do Hillside Festival. What else was I able to do? There was more, and I can't think of it right now.
Yeah.
Hillside Inside, I was able to do, and the BIPOC Hamilton Arts Festival, obviously, and just showcases and shows as well. So those have been really interesting to be a part of. What I will say about the pandemic, despite it closing off sort of some of our gateways to income and being visible, it's opened up a lot of other things. Because I think what being at home for all of us has allowed us to do is to showcase our talents from the space of our own home. So I was able to be a part of sort of showcases and festivals that I don't necessarily think I would normally be a part of due to time. Maybe it wasn't worth it to drive all the way down and drive all the way back, or whatever it may be. I was able to do it from the comfort of my own home.
Mm-hmm. So your album, Aisha Extended, was released uh-huh. in 2020, featuring 7 songs. When did you start working on that record?
I started working on it, I would say, final year of Mohawk, so that's 2018? Yeah, 2018. So that's when sort of the writing process began. A lot of those songs I wrote for the songwriting course at Mohawk, funny enough. And from then on, I was tweaking it and adding it and sort of producing those songs as well. So the writing process was long, but it was really, really fun. And then I finished, I think, recording most of those songs in 2019, whilst I was in Toronto. And then I took some time with it, released some of them under the name Aisha Barrow, and then felt like they'd be better outfitted under the name of Life in the Tribe. So I pivoted and I re-released them in 2020 as well.
Do you mind going through the 7 songs on the album and giving me a little description of each and what they mean to you?
Yeah, of course. So I extended, I even remember the 7 songs. So it starts out with LINT, which stands for Love in the Nighttime. So essentially, I mean, that song was sort of kind of my way to start off the EP with a bang. It's really just about really being in love with someone and being giddy about it and excited for it. And sort of like the heart racing feeling that you get. So it's a fun percussive song as well. The entire album sort of goes through the stages of a relationship, being from extremely happy to being super sad. So that's what it started with, LINT, which is a really exciting one. Roses is sort of an interlude of sorts between LINT and Soul Presence, and Roses really is more of like a somber sound in that it's a little snippet of how you feel after you've experienced sort of betrayal in a relationship. It's a chance, if you will. And then Soul Presence is the next one. Soul Presence, all of these songs are about love. Let me preface it. I was clearly going through some things at the time.
Mm-hmm.
but Soul Presence is really just about being in the presence of someone that you think is just that person for you. They match you in every way, and you haven't felt that way before, and so they kind of feel like present for your soul. Kind of on the nose of the title there. Easy to Love is about sort of being in a hard relationship and knowing that it's not right for you. However, the person that you're with is easy to love, in that, like, you just don't want to leave them. You don't want to let it go, even if you know that that person is not for you. It's about being in the comfort of a relationship and not wanting to let it go. Shun Ra kind of wraps up that whole sort of relationship story, in that it's the freedom of the up and down. So it was really inspired by Imogen Heap, this song, and sort of folk artists as well. So the guitarist on that song is Daniel Walton of Woolly Mantis. And sort of it's my song written about my freedom. So I kind of think of it as a bird taking flight, in that I've experienced all of this, and now I just want to fly away and fly into the sun, essentially. And from that point on, we have two bonus tracks, so Better and Soft in My Heart. Better is a love letter to myself. So after all of sort of the tumultuousness of the relationship, from those five songs, Better is about wanting to love myself better, wanting to get to a place where I care for myself in the same way that I expect a partner would. And then Soft in My Heart is about opening up myself to love again, essentially knowing that, like, if I want to be with someone, I have to soft in my heart. I have to open myself again, and I can't be so hearted. And yeah, those are the songs.
Yeah. So this was actually your debut album. And what was the original vision for it? Did you have like a certain aesthetic or a certain mood, or what was your original vision for it?
Well, the mood was essentially just to have the demos and put something out, because I felt like I'd been sitting on these songs for such a long time. So it was only going to be five songs. It was only going to be up until Sun Ra. But then as I was writing it, I really saw a story there that I wanted to tell. So it kind of evolved to that, in that, like, start out sort of being in love, and it's your first go at it, and you're experiencing all of these different kinds of firsts, and then you get to this place of really like, oh, I have to offer this to myself. You know, I have to get to a place for myself where I'm in a good enough mindset to be able to experience this in a healthy way. And that sort of, it sort of mirrored my life and what I was feeling. From the beginning of recording this album to the end of it, I had started and ended a relationship. So it sort of mirrored it, and this is what came out.
Mm-hmm. Who did you work with to record and produce the project?
A lot of that project was self-produced. A lot of it. Mm-hmm. I would say 80% of it. So I did have some instrumentalists come in and play. So Nathaniel Pollard, the keyboardist for Life in the Tribe, and Jason Azorio, of course, the guitarist. And then I worked with Daniel Walton as well from Woolly Mantis. And then I worked with a guy named Duan Kim from Korea for Better. We had been SoundCloud friends, and we wanted to work together, and that's how that song came about. But the majority of it was self-produced by me.
Mm-hmm. Would you say that you have a favorite song on the album?
It's ever-evolving. I don't know. It's hard for me to pick a favorite song, just because those songs are so closely personally linked to a time and an experience that I'm sort of out of now. So it's hard to pick a song, but I would say Roses. I really, really like what I was able to come up with on Roses there, and Better.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. How was the reception from your family and friends after you released it?
It was really, really well received. I mean, I think more than anything, I wanted to prove to myself that I could put out an EP or put out an album. So the reception for myself was great, but my friends and family, my family in particular, I think they heard it and they were like, "Oh, like, she's actually really going for this. It's not some dream that she says she wants to do. It's it's actually like something that she really wants to do. So in that sense, the reception was great. My friends have been super duper supportive. Like, they'll tell me which songs are their favorites, and even in the process of recording it and recording now, I'm able to like go to them and show them demos and be like, hey, what do you think of this? And in that way, it's collaborative with them as well. So the reception of it was great.
Yeah, totally. What's a major music career goal that you're hoping to hit soon? Whether that's playing a specific festival, whether that's collaborating with somebody, whether that's signing to a label, is there a goal that you're really looking forward to hitting?
I'm really, really looking forward to being self-employed through music. Mm-hmm. And I think I'm close. But I'm really looking forward to hitting that. My intention has been always to create a space where I can thrive. So I've always intended to be an independent artist. And what the goal that I've always been striving for is to be, to be self-sustainable as an artist. So that's the goal I'm really looking forward to hitting.
Yeah. What can we look forward to seeing from you?
More and more music coming out. So there are more music videos on the way, more singles on the way. I'm currently recording, and will hopefully have something out to you guys by the end of August, early September. So you guys can look forward to that and just sort of taking flight from there on.
Yeah, totally. Thank you so much for jumping in here and talking to me. I really appreciate it.
No worries. Thank you for having me.
Yeah.
I'm excited to be on Hot Shop.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. You guys can find Aisha here on Twitter as AishaB93 or Life in the Tribe, and all streaming services, Bandcamp, website, and other socials as Life in the Tribe. And we're going to wrap up this episode with another single by Life in the Tribe. L-I-N-T is a track off of Aisha's 2020 EP about love, lust, and asking for full commitment from a partner.
Hey guys, this is Aisha Barrow of Life in the Tribe, and you're listening to Hot Shot on Air on 101.5 The Hawk.
You don't know nothing, but I'm going to tell you something. I'm saying, hey, yo.
Let's make love in the night time. Fill my heart with a lifeline. Be on it. Take my heart in the right time. Fill my love in the bloodline. Be on it. Be on it. Be on it. And if I'm searching for my love, and being with you just ain't enough. Be on it. You gotta love and treat me right. If you all wanna spend my whole life, so be on it, be on it, be on it. I'll be waiting on sunshine daily. I'm making my heart go crazy to beat on me. Searching for my love, and being with you just ain't enough to be on it.